Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. Today, we're going to be talking AI, which is your favorite topic. I know the listeners anticipate and expect me to talk about AI, and no shortage of conversations about AI in the past little while on this channel. We've been covering this topic pretty well. And today, my guest of honor, Ben Tasker. Ben is joining me from Boston, I believe, greater Boston area somewhere near Boston there, Ben, right?
New Hampshire, but close enough.
Yeah, close enough, huh? That's like me living in Mississauga. When people ask me, where are you from? I say from Toronto, because nobody would know where Mississauga is in a lot of cases, right? So I really appreciate you joining me, Ben, on this journey to record our one of our episodes today. And you joining me in a very good time. Today, we are celebrating our third year on the channel. We've interviewed, you've been 190 executive and CEOs and thought leaders. They came by, we've interviewed them, we've had a conversation with. And I don't know how people in those types of podcasts measure things. One indicator, I guess, is downloads, close to 300,000 downloads so far.
That's and fantastic.
I am very happy with the results and keep spreading the word, keep educating our audience. So thanks for joining me on this journey. I appreciate it, Ben. As we say on this channel, Ben, everybody's got a story. Let's start with this one. That's the easy one. What's your story? What got you here?
So my story is falling into AI by accident. It's really my own upskilling journey. So when I was an undergrad, which was many, many years ago at this point, I went to school for hospital administration. I thought I wanted to be a hospital administrator. I get my degree. Obviously, you go work in a hospital to be a hospital administrator. And one of my first tasks was to try to help figure out patient volumes around the hospital. So the smaller doctor's offices that aren't attached to the hospital, but are affiliated with the hospital. And I was very naive at the time. I was like, oh, no problem. This is a fun project. The more senior people knew, though, that this was not the easiest project that anybody could do, simply because they didn't have all the data. I thought it was going to be in a database. Turns out I had to go to the actual doctor's offices. They would throw notepads at me. They would, you know, this is an exaggeration, but they would give me a stone tablet, essentially, like I would have to count by hand how many patients they saw. But it's really a human-centric problem. If I go back to the administrators and give the wrong number or lower number than they were expecting, right, they're going to close the practice. That impacts the care for that community. And that's when I really saw the human side of these data-driven decisions. I also saw, or I really thought about how we could use that data to better forecast, predict, impact those human communities. And at the same time, I'm more of an innovator. I already had that business background. Data science and data analytics programs were emerging. I was like, you know, this sounds really fun. It has computer science. It has the math that I like. It has coding. And that's really where I learned AI, because data science, the same algorithms are in artificial intelligence. I know the words are different, but I promise you the math has been around since the dawn of time. And then we applied that to other human-centered problems. So then my first job after I got my master's was working for a college system. We developed an algorithm to help boost student success. So what that means is that there's ways to make a student stay in college longer. This is a community college system too. So those students completing are way better off than if they don't complete, more so than a regular student, because they're taking on more debt. And a completion could be a nurse or it could be a plumber, but it's making sure that they have the resources they need, potentially changing the class, giving them extensions on assignments, potentially just being more customer and student centric. And that's been the case for most of the projects I've been on, actually, because then I transferred into healthcare. Now we're working with patients again, but this time, you know, change the word student, patient, customer, all the same, for a patient algorithm to help predict critical care outcomes. So taking 9 variables and then giving it to a clinical care team so that they can intervene more quickly to help prevent things like an infection, sepsis, potentially moving someone on a bed so they don't get bed sores. Those things can add up over time. It can cause critical care conditions. Then I transferred into academics again. I just bounced back and forth, really, Rob. I went back to academics, started in a faculty position for Southern New Hampshire University. I moved into the role of dean for artificial intelligence. I helped launch their micro-credential programs for applied AI. it was one of the funnest projects I've actually ever been on. I loved that opportunity. And there I got to work with workforce partners. And workforce is a lot different than a traditional student body. It was more experiential education, more hands-on. And then I transferred into workforce development from Southern New Hampshire University. Now I'm leading a data and AI academy, upskilling and reskilling 36,000 individuals from around the globe.
Wow, what a journey. You know, starting with that whole innovation, because you saw an opportunity and you said, you know what, we can do this better. I think that's the fundamental thought process that every innovator or every creator of a new technology, new solution go through. But some people don't have that in them. They would walk by an opportunity that wouldn't even realize it. And here you are, you know, you saw possibility of doing things a little different, a little better to produce better outcome for everybody involved. And you jumped on the opportunity to do that. You kind of reminded me like when I first started my career in the tech sector years ago, I mean, eons ago, before the gray hair. And I was working for an insurance company in the actuarial department, and they had this form called cost trend factor. So if you're, for those who are familiar with how you cost out a, or how do you price a life insurance policy from the, you set the rates on the inside of the insurance company, you have to go through cost trend factors. What influence basically the price of a policy. And I remember doing all this by calculator, pencil, and a paper. I couldn't believe it. And the time it took, it was forever, what sounded like forever. Now, I was a young grad from computer science, and I said, okay, there must be a better way to do this. And at the time, you know, computers were just coming out. I'm sounding like a dinosaur now. The computer's just coming out, and we were able to, I was able to automate all this and put it into back then, you know, as rudimentary as it is. But believe it or not, there are a lot of opportunities today, or a lot of places today, where paper are still being used. And we did a podcast last week with the law society called CBA here in Toronto, in Ontario. And I was informed that many law firms still use, in some cases, typewriters. So, you know, for and from an automation, from an, maybe that's how what people want us to do. Like, I mean, you can't change people, right? So people are happy doing things the way they are. That's fine. And that's what I, something I'm realizing as I talk to many people on this channel. I'm not sure if you agree with this. You see an opportunity, but not everybody else see an opportunity. Maybe people have a comfort zone with the way things are, and they don't want to change it. Have you ever come across that?
It happens all the time, especially for what I'm doing now with the workforce. Either individuals don't understand the impact of artificial intelligence. They're afraid of it. So they're like, I'm not training this thing to take my job. Why would I do that? Or it's so broad because it can do so many things that they just don't engage with. It's just too overwhelming for them. So even just interact, like a simple interaction, doing a summary, for example, they're like, I'm good. So I can see that, but back to your point, I really think this is transformation. Take the AI out of it. It's change management. So the way I like to approach these problems is that I like to work with individuals to try to figure out what the root cause of something that they hate doing, completing a template, doing that algorithm potentially that you were just talking about, maybe doing something more broadly and then trying to incorporate AI into that problem so that they don't really have to worry about it as much. And then they're like, wow, how can I learn more about this? How can I keep using Gen AI or some other form of artificial intelligence to automate other parts of my life? So learning doesn't really have to be academic. It can be fun. And that's something I try to bring to everybody that I interact with. Instead of, you know, just the generic courses that you can take, it's really about solving a problem.
So how do you know, the workforce development part, it's really interesting because when you take a look at what the bottlenecks are, it is not technology. It is not, in many cases, investment, not much investment to be done there. And it is more of the people adjusting to the new realities of things because, we had this this podcast this morning, somebody says to me, you know, people put their heads in the sand and hopefully all this will go away. Everybody will wake up one day and say, oh yeah, we survived the AI. I don't think this is going to work that way now. I mean, this is something here to, you know, I would say permanently alter the way we are working, the way we are interacting with each other as society. And there's one outcome of all this, or one obligation for us as a humanity, is to learn it, learn to adapt with it, and be in control with it. Because if you're not in charge of the process, you are the process, in my opinion. How does workforce development work within all this? And what are you seeing out there from a gap perspective, technical leadership or mindsets, the problems?
So I think what most...
Sorry, I threw a lot at you there, but...
No, I appreciate it. So I think a lot of individuals, I don't think, view AI maybe as transformational as it is. Maybe it's maybe because we're living in it. I like to call it the AI between times. We're not really out of the past yet. Some people are still using typewriters, but we're not really into the future yet either. We're in that awkward period where we're trying to figure this out. And traditionally, because companies go through this change probably pretty frequently, every 5 years, some people can ignore a technology because in 5 years they're going to replace it again, right? Or 7 years or whatever your tech cycle, your tech stack cycle is. But with AI, it's not only a tech stack cycle, it's being built into applications that everybody's using, like Adobe. It's now in pretty much every Microsoft product. Most organizations run off Microsoft. If not, it's in every Google product. You're probably on one of those two. It's on individuals' phones, and it can really simplify a lot of aspects of your life. One example of this in how I got a call center to be more engaged is that they have transcripts. All the calls are recorded, and they have this complex system for a customer service management system. And instead of working through that entire outdated system, you can take the transcript, you can use the internal AI guardrails and the AI tool that the company provides, and you can make, with a couple prompts, an entire customer service system. You can analyze the customer sentiment, you can use it for training, you can get feedback on the call, you can decide whether you need to escalate or not. And it really saved them a lot of notes. And then three people went and told the rest of that department, which is thousands of people, how great AI was and how it automated that one task that took them hours and minutes. And they know it's accurate. They're still in the loop because they have to take the notes with of the customer and understand the transcript. They have to confirm those two things. So for me, it was simple because I understand the technology behind it. But for these individuals, they didn't even think about using AI. They thought it was something from a sci-fi movie. They're like, why would I do this for a customer call? It can't hear what I'm saying. I don't know how to load a transcript. So I think it's the change management's making it more simple than it seems. Like, I think when people think AI, maybe it's super advanced, where they think of the Terminator or, something crazy. AI could just be the chatbot that you interact with on your PC. It can help do basic, make calendar invites.
Now, from what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, when people are afraid of something, and they exaggerate in their mind how difficult it's going to be to change, to move around. And I've had this conversation with many people where I was just putting the people in the room and we talk about it. It's sort of like you're almost going through not training, but you're almost going through like a therapy session with people, trying to tell them, look, it's not going to kill you. It's an absolutely okay to use, and it's not going to replace your job, because guess what? Most companies, most businesses are demanding you to do more. Because now that most bosses or most executives know that you have tools to increase your productivity. They're not saying, I want to replace you, but they're asking you is, there are some jobs out there where they're measured by productivity, like everything else. They're asking you to increase your productivity, but you're human. How do you do that? You have to deploy or employ technologies to assist you to do that. I call it the army of one. The individuals become multifaceted in their skills. You used to handle one specific task. Now with AI, you're able to handle skills that you probably and acquire skills that you never thought you could in the past. So it's allowing us to learn. I'm not sure if you're facing this too as well. Allowing us to learn fast, increase our productivity, and at the same time, we still need the human in a call center. I mean, you still need people to answer the phones. Sorry, what's your
Not only
comment?
do we need My comment there is that, so there's a lot of organizations that are moving really quickly with AI, and I think this is another reason why a lot of folks are scared of it. But there'll be organizations that will lay off tens of thousands of people, it seems like, or at least that's what the headline says, right, in the news article. And sure, they have AI, they implemented it.
Aren't they hiring him back now? I thought they're
That's
hiring him
that's
back.
exactly what I was going to say, Robin. They hire him right back. They have to hire everybody back plus some. So it's just like, what is going on, folks? You didn't even test this. Like, none of it makes sense to me. So I think actually the end result of that news article is positive news, is that yes, right? Like, the call center is not being replaced by the AI, not anytime soon anyways.
Yeah, look, I mean, we've seen all the news about, people jump the gun pretty quickly and they started letting go people and they started laying off people because somebody somewhere wanted, a CEO somewhere wanted to get their bonus early, I guess, or something. I don't know. By reducing the cost of labor, you hit your target pretty quickly and the board will be happy with you. They'll give you a fat bonus. I guess that's the idea there. I think there's going to be some clawback on these bonuses now, I feel like, for those, for some of those CEOs. I think they're biting their nails as we speak right now.
I call that an AI whoopsie, like we didn't think. Yeah.
I love that. So on what you're doing right now from a workforce development side, Ben, where are you with this?
So this organization started AI upskilling officially 2 years ago, and there's been a couple iterations.
Is this National Grid you're talking about?
Yes, this is National Grid. So there's a couple iterations of that academy, but now we linked it to actual skills taxonomies. So a skills taxonomy is just different levels of skills for each job role in the organization, and then those skills are attached to the job role. So people have a more clear image of how this impacts them. And then we simplified the campaign. So there's a couple different ways to do this. This isn't the exact campaign. I'm giving you an example here, but we classified all the roles into three categories: beginners, intermediate, advanced. That way folks knew which way to go. So if I'm already have a PhD in robotics, an engineer, I'm not doing the beginner classes, I'm doing more of the advanced classes, or vice versa. If I've never heard of the word artificial intelligence, I've never used it, I'm more, you know, I'm in the beginning track. So it became more clear where folks can start. We brought in some partnerships from large external companies that also help do training. It's a small and mighty team. It depends how you want to come up with full-time folks. There's four people, five with part-time. National Grid's 36,000 individuals. So you don't need a large team to do this. It's just that change management piece, which I originally overlooked, is the key to this. It's constant messaging, having a good, clear message behind these skills pathways, what you're actually teaching in these workshops, the courses, how they're going to benefit the employees, and then going into each area, listening to some of the problems, and then showing them, making that a lesson. Instead of me coming in with something pre-canned or a partner, hey, what are some problems you're having? I'll be back next week. And then you unlock some doors that way.
Now, this is pretty amazing, obviously. According to what I've learned prior to this podcast recording, that you've helped launch applied AI certification that supported almost 225,000 learners out there. That's pretty much enormous. Teaching AI at that scale, did you get some learnings yourself from that exercise?
Absolutely. And it helped transfer to a lot of my skill set today, but really thinking about education in the sense of a product. So traditional education's time-based. This is a non-traditional certification. It's called skills-based learning. It's a micro-credential technically. It's 6 weeks instead of 8 to 10 weeks. It can count as credit, but it doesn't have to count as credit. So it takes the time component out of it. So you could sprint through it. You could take the 6 weeks, but if there's a time box, that way people don't stay in that time box forever. And it's more experiential. So essentially, there's three different courses. Each course is 2 weeks, and individuals start learning what AI is, what it means, how to implement it, what a good prompt framework is, how to correctly interact, and the risks of interacting with AI. Then by the end, the last two-week course, these individuals have to try to figure out some sort of complexity in their workplace and how they can apply AI to it. So it's much more open-ended than doing a worksheet or some sort of assessment. And we're using AI to teach AI in that program. So what that means is that AI can help you brainstorm. It can help give you 24/7 feedback. It can support a very large volume of students. But there's still humans in the course. So there's still human evaluators giving feedback. So it's not just all AI, all human. It's a blended environment, just like you're going to see in the future workforce.
And how do you deliver these teachings, these courses? How do you deliver them today?
So those teachings were all online, all virtual.
All virtual. And then you have students, I'm assuming, from around the world. Is that fair to say?
I do not know of any international students, actually. They were mostly U.S.-based and partners. So it's like a company came in and they're like, I want you to train all these people within 6 weeks.
And did you notice any disconnect between what you are teaching and the problems at work that these individuals who are taking the training are facing?
No, because of how the program's structured. So we simplified a learning pedagogy. We broke it down to learn, practice, apply, reflect. So in the learning stage, that's more of the theory, There's curated videos, there's instructor written content. It really sets the stage. And then when you practice, the practice is optional. And I thought by making something optional, a lot of people would not do it, but it was quite the opposite. Everybody was doing the optional because it was fun. So some of an optional example could be, for example, making a trip plan to go to Disney, booking a flight with AI, or planning your vacation. Something really fun that, you know, a skill is applicable, right? So if I can work with AI to do that, now I can plan a project potentially, or I can brainstorm with AI, I can problem solve. So it's setting up entry level skills and then attaching them to practice. Then the application is a project, and that project and each course was evaluated. It was evaluated by a human, but it built upon all the other concepts in the course prior to it. So one, prompt engineering, responsible AI, making an AI video of choice, and then really helping on the second course, navigating the AI complexities. And that really helped individuals to start to brainstorm on how they can apply AI for their role. And I think that's really the sweet spot for some of this training, is because if you can apply AI for your role,
that's what I was going to talk about. Yeah.
You can bring it back to the company. You can show your manager, and then that training now isn't just generic. More people are going to want to take it.
It's sort of applied learning right now. So
exactly.
Which is, this is what you want to do. I mean, you want to see the benefit of what you just learned. You don't want to keep it at a theory level. And somebody comes back to the office, well, yeah, thanks for sending me to the training, but I can't do anything with it on my job. You want to make it job related. And I think you've solved that problem. Now,
the key I missed, though, is the reflection part. So the reflection might sound a little bit silly, but with human reflection, a couple paragraphs, what you learned, how you troubleshoot, got it, who'd you work with, how did the group work, all those dynamics actually helped enhance the learning. And then it set that cycle up again so that you then go right back into the learning. So it's continuous learning and learning agility, which are two major skills during this AI between times.
And I'm taking it beyond what they learn during the set of hours or however you measure this training that they take with you. I'm thinking the side benefit of all this is learning how to learn AI. So beside the immediate courses that you're going to take or the immediate learning you're going to take, now as an individual, you can do your own research. You can jump in, figure out like what others are doing. You can expand your learning through the learning techniques that you learned going through your courses. Is that fair to say?
It is applied AI. It's fun. It doesn't have to be academic. The more technical AI is in a master's program, PhD level programs, this is trying to make AI accessible for everybody, if that helps set the stage.
Yeah, but I mean, it allows, like in my, like I just use myself as an example, for instance, you know, I stopped programming, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I never touched a code in my life after that. I moved into business development and that was it. So I left a corporate job in November last year, and I started my own company, N49 Networks. And I thought, okay, well, I got to put a company together, so I got to better learn how to code or something. So I went back into AI and I started playing around and I figured out how to code now. And I started building in small applications here and there. In fact, the entire thing, beside my conversation with you on this podcast, is run through AI. So the post-editing, the publishing, the blogs, all the social media pieces.
That's a perfect example of using AI to learn AI, Robin. That's a fantastic example.
Absolutely. You know, I started with the whole thing 3 years ago, building this channel, the Localization Fireside Chat, completely manually. It would take me like 3 weeks to produce one episode. Now, after I finish the recording, if, you know, I've got the energy, a couple of hours, the whole thing is done. So it's not, and I'm producing a lot more content. I only used to produce one video of each, for instance, of each conversation. Now I'm producing close to 30 videos per conversation. And they're all branded. They're all, you know, described and uploaded properly to YouTube, etc. And plus the, you know, the rest of the audio pieces. So it really took one person, and instead of having like an army of people trying to support that particular exercise, and turned me into like, really, I mean, I had people calling me the other day, they would like to buy or like to explore buying some of these tools that I've built. Unfortunately, I built them by command line. Like I'm not fancy with that stuff. So I don't have GUI on it, or I don't have any of that stuff. So most of my tools are command based. I run them in just from basic commands, command on in Windows, which is fine for me. I mean, I'm not looking for anything fancy. I'm just looking to speed up the process. And I think when people look at AI in that sense, they find it as a savior versus a threat, in my opinion. And it was a savior for me, to be honest.
And you probably like doing the podcast because you've been doing it for three years. But the editing and everything, that might be a little tedious.
That's
right.
Exactly.
So that's exactly what I'm trying to explain, where you found a problem. You're like, I'm going to try this AI thing. You probably tried a couple different tools, right? You found the tool of choice. It works well for you. You prompt it. You have your system set up. That right there is exactly the type of thinking, right? No formal training. You didn't take a course or anything.
No.
Right? You just used the AI to teach yourself.
And you know what?
So putting a wrap around that, a little bit of structure, that's exactly what the micro certification does.
So I do this, and I do this every Friday morning. We have an exchange networking event, and I invited you for that. I hope you can make it tomorrow. We're doing an agentic AI feature presentation by one of our colleagues who's coming to the networking event. And everybody talks about it from a different angle. It'd be interesting for you to listen to this, because some people come at it from a point of, well, I don't know how long we're going to keep our jobs. And some people come at it from an angle saying, I'm 100% in, I want to use it. People are, I was just going to ask you the same question, the following question. It differs how to use AI depends on what job you're in, what responsibilities you have, etc. Because this is an individualized thing. So I'm assuming from what you and I have been talking about is AI for marketeer is different than AI for lawyers, is different than AI for healthcare professionals, and AI for executives in general. Each one of them has a different set of responsibilities, tasks, things that they like to do. They are different from everybody else. So it's not a cookie cutter thing. Am I correct?
It's not a cookie cutter thing because the outputs are different, but the inputs are highly similar. So a way
the fundamentals, you mean?
Yeah, the fundamentals are. So the way you structure a prompt as an executive should be highly similar to how I structure a prompt for coding. Two different, completely different outputs. One could be a one-pager brief. One's code, obviously. But that prompt structure, understanding how to check it, making sure that it's accurate, that's a skill.
Now, from a business application point of view, what has been the reaction? What has been the feedback after people go and take your courses? What's the, I want to say, the positive or negative impact on the business?
I think people love it once they try it. It's really getting them to try it. So making a 1-hour session, sometimes just doing 20-minute demos. You can do a lot in 20 minutes by showing applications in a specific tool and then making it customized to their specific area. Where there's apprehension is that they're not sure what to do with the certificate. Like sometimes it's forced, if that makes sense. They're not like, okay, I can use AI, I can automate some processes, but what can I do after that? Thinking about it more broadly. But other individuals start doing that and they're like, I want to go get a master's in computer science. How do I do it? Show me the way. How do I trade this micro certificate back in? How do I keep progressing? I loved it so much. I had no idea that I could code at this level, not knowing how, like theoretically not knowing how to code. And once you're in the program then, right, like AI is going to get you so far, but they're eventually going to it's like taking the training wheels off, right? Like learning to ride a bike. It's kind of amazing, actually, when you think about it like that. You're watching a flower bloom.
Well, absolutely, because you're opening their eyes on what's possible.
Yes. They're opening their eyes on what's possible. I just show them the way.
You just let them into the space where they can do that. It's your safe space with AI. Come and take our training, I guess. We do have an AI practice in N49, and we're doing automation we're helping our customers with automation, etc. So one of the things is as we go through this process, it feels to me that, people are coming at it from, hey, Robin, can we do this? And the answer is always yes, because the possibilities are completely endless, to be honest with you. We have people complaining about, for instance, well, I can't put my data in public sites. I have to put them in, behind a firewall in a data sovereign area kind of thing. So there's solutions for that. People are saying, well, we can't trust AI. Well, you can trust some of it. Nobody's telling you, like, if AI told you to go divorce your wife, you go divorce your wife. Like this case, I guess it was in the public, and that's why I'm reciting it, because it was in the news not too long ago, where somebody apparently listened to the ChatGPT advice, ended up divorcing his wife, and that came out during the judge asking him, Why did you do it? So the ChatGPT recommended it. So we're not at that level. Human needs to stay in control of their own destiny at the end of the day, regardless of what tools they are using. You can't blame things on, oh, well, ChatGPT told me. It's not going to work. Not yet. Maybe in 20, 30 years, but not now. But in business transformation, are you involved in business transformation? Like from people, companies taking on AI adoption, and I've been through so many of these conversations. People come in and say, well, Robin, I'd like to put an AI application together. I said, well, what would you like the application to do? I don't know. Why are you doing it? Well, my boss told me to. Don't know where you, have you seen this? Like how, I get it. Like from an AI adoption for a particular company, they go through stages, I guess. Stage one, I'm assuming it would be curiosity. Second, it would be like workflow integration. Let's figure out what to do with the workflow. And third would be, hey, you know what? Let's flip everything to AI, AI first operation. Have you seen it? Have you seen this transformation? Like a caterpillar becoming a butterfly?
Absolutely. And this transformation, so it's like you just synthesized it in probably a couple seconds. This is like a 24-month journey. So I just want everybody listening to realize that it's just not like flip a switch to do it successfully. Oh, yeah. It's not flip a switch. You have the transformation piece is the training. What are we going to do with our employees? Making sure that you're training to the right skills. If there's going to be augmentations to roles, which roles are going to be impacted, the responsible AI guardrails, and then answering the questions, right? So it's like right AI, right time, right scale. If all those things don't line up, if you can, you know, buy versus build. A lot of organizations right now are trying to build their own AI. Should we wait and just buy it when it's off the shelf? It's changing pretty rapidly. It sometimes doesn't make sense to wait, but it could be better. For an example of that was with OpenAI and Claude with their new data integration tool. So you can build applications layered onto the organization's data. So you can create, for example, customized customer management systems entirely without having to go buy $10 million, $100 million tools. These APIs are probably $500,000 for a large company. I mean, you're paying for usage too. So but for implementation though, like that's a steal. It's almost kind of like, what's the catch? What's the catch there? But there is a catch. Now, this other organization that's using data to train models, I know all these organizations say they don't use your data, but they do have access to it. That's a trade-off. That's something you have to seriously think about. Then on top of that, how are we gonna, because it's in like a totally customized system, right? Like it's almost going back to like 1990 where all these custom systems, and then we went out of that and now we're going back into that. How is this going to impact the business? Like, are we thinking about the whole system? So for the customer service scenario, how is this going to impact finance? How is this going to impact resolution? How is this going to impact the fraud department? Are all these other areas also going to have AI? Are we just focusing on this one area? So yes, we are going to see a lot of that transformation, but it really needs to have its due diligence. At the end of the day, you have to think about the value. And it's not value in the sense of what's AI going to do for us. It's about the opportunity cost. So if it's going to cost you X to implement the AI and you get a 7x, you know, fold on that implementation, that's great value. But think about all the other things that go into that. Career mobility, how are you measuring that? The marketing story, the upskilling journeys. A lot of companies don't even think of that as part of ROI, and it's a huge component of it.
Now, you know, those are like very fascinating in my opinion, because it's just, you open up a brand new, as I listen to you and as I continue thinking about this, you open up a huge discussions around, you know, the millions of people out there that they're worried about what's going to happen to my job. And here is you telling them, don't worry, I'll give you a little bit of a training. You'll be good at it. You'll add value. You create value in your own job right now, where you are. That's the message I'm hearing. So you don't need to quit and go find something else in your whatever job that you think you do. If you like where you are and you want to sustain it in the new world, in the new technology, in the new era that we're going to be all moving into as a humanity, come and get yourself a little bit of learning. It's not difficult. Trust me, I'm in my late 50s, early 60s. I was able to learn it. I think anybody can do it. It's not that big of a deal to learn, but you got to put your mindset to it. You got to, as an individual, you need to learn that stuff because A, it helps. Second, it's going to be, like as you mentioned earlier in our conversation, it's going to be in everything, in your phone. And this is without moving into the chip level. So when AI becomes part of the chip manufacturing level, like being on a chip, you're going to see it in your microwave, in your fridge, in your dishwasher. I don't know. You're going to see it everywhere. So it's not far-fetched to say, upgrade your skills or add a little bit of your skills and you'd be better at it than somebody who didn't. And that's where training is.
Not just that, Robin, but think about the counter narrative too. So let's pretend I was anti-AI. I was terrified of it. It's one of the biggest fears of my life. Still by learning about it, you don't have to engage with it, but still by learning about it, there's a lot of jobs in society that are unfilled, like teaching, being a firefighter, law enforcement, and all those are human skills-based jobs. So as you're going on this learning journey, you should try to invest in some of those human skills too, because right now their society might not deem them at a high premium. But once AI starts automating some of these other skills, like coding, for example, prompt engineering, for example, you can fall back on those human skills and collect the premium. So it's worth your time, even if you're not looking at AI, to at least start an upskilling journey.
Now, when you've looked at some of these companies that they adopted AI, and there's plenty of them examples out there, in your opinion, what sets the successful one apart from the non-successful one? Is it leadership mindset, change management, culture, governance? What do you think?
To summarize it, to try to summarize it simply, looking at all the cases, and this is just my opinion, but I really feel like a lot of organizations aren't thinking about a system-based solution. So they're just plopping in a tool in this department, ripping out a customer service department over here. It's not really well integrated. It's what I call a pinpoint solution. The system solutions, 5% of companies in 2025 have achieved the system-based solution. And those are the most successful companies. You probably interact with some of them. Some of them are actually the AI companies that we're using. But taking those out, we've probably interacted with some of these other companies. Those companies are crushing it with AI because they're doing it as a system. It's not just in one department. An excellent example of this is at Walmart. Walmart gave all their employees an AI tool just recently. They told everybody to use it in and out of work. You can use it whenever you want because it's secure. They didn't put any training behind it, and they just built their campaign around that AI. It blew off the charts. And that's an example of skill-based learning too, because they're learning new skills without even knowing when they interact with the AI. And then following up on that, they realized that employees were using it to do stuff at home, like paint rooms, plan workouts, plan meals. It saved them time at home, which then made them better employees at work. That's a fantastic example.
That's huge. When you extend your software to your employee as a large employer in this fashion, you're definitely looking for usability. You're definitely looking for people to adopt it and make heroes out of it. So kudos to Walmart in this case. And I just met with my friends at Walmart this week. So
I believe they also pledged no layoffs for 3 years due to AI. Don't strict quote. I'm pretty sure that was in the article, but
yeah. Look, I mean, you very, very valid point. Layoffs are not necessarily related to AI because let's face it, many companies are way behind on deploying AI anyway to reap the benefit of it and execute layoffs. I mean, that's a completely different discussion. You're very prematurely laying off people. You just put on AI. When did you figure out we're going to have to lay off 10,000 people? Like, I don't get it. It's too early to figure out if this is warranted or not.
You spend too much money on the bad AI.
Yeah, that's right. Now, do you ever have a conversation about responsible AI and what does it mean to you?
So responsible AI to me means that you're mitigating the bias. So making sure that it's safe, transparent, there's accountability, but you're also increasing the transparency around it. So making sure that it's being used for what it's supposed to be being used for. So it's not really like data governance or another governance type or even compliance. It's an actual living, breathing organism within your ecosystem. So what that may look like is that you could have a steering committee. Literally every department has representation on it. Now this might sound like bureaucracy, but it's really important that everybody has buy-in to the AI before it's just implemented to think about that AI system. But everybody can kind of vote on what tools can be used, how they're being used, considerations, what happens if data is breached out of the AI, what happens if the AI does some, or an employee does something with the AI that they're not supposed to do, who's at fault of that? Is the company at fault with it, like the AI company? Is the actual company at fault? Is the employee at fault? Those are important discussions to have, and you need more than just a few people, more than just the AI department to make that decision. That's a very broad decision. And then using external case studies to help enforce some of these rules, and then really defining three pillars for what AI is at your organization. So is it being transparent, not replacing, and that could mean human and other processes, being responsible with the technology. There's a lot of different pillars out there. Usually three is the sweet spot, because if you have any more than three, people aren't going to, in my opinion, memorize it all. But it's coming up with those three pillars is the most difficult to do. But I actually would say that that's the first step in an AI process, because without good responsible AI, you're not going to have good AI.
That's right. And then people will be afraid of it, and you don't have adoption, and everything falls apart. Now, from your perspective there, Ben, if somebody asks you, what is the biggest myth about AI and jobs, what would you say?
A lot of individuals think there's probably going to be like 95% unemployment, and I'm vice versa. It's probably 95% employment. Maybe from the sense that you might have a job transition, but think about what AI can do for individuals that want to start their own business, be entrepreneurs. Imagine if everybody had access to Steve Jobs. Not everybody loves Steve Jobs, but a lot of people may. That's a pretty incredible world, having access to those elite individuals, because AI can take on any personality. It can help you complete forms. The biggest reason people don't start these businesses is because they can't navigate all the complexities around it. AI can pretty much help you with that. It can help you make a website. It can help you with your personal branding. It can help you with advertising. That's a job. A really great example of this. Now, this isn't a full-time job. This is probably considered a side gig, but a student I had runs an Etsy store, and they needed help paying for their tuition at school, and they didn't know what to do. And I was like, you run an Etsy store. Why don't you use AI to figure out designs that aren't in any other store and design those designs with AI? Let folks know you're doing that. They'll buy the templates, and they'll probably buy whatever you're designing with. They made $5,000 in a few weeks doing this, and they're slowly growing that business over time. Also by using AI chatbots to allocate more consumers to their Etsy page. Not technical background whatsoever. Now they're pretty technical, but it was just an amazing success story about some of the positive aspects.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities out there by applying the tools at hand right now, and it's going to get better. I mean, you started the conversation by saying it's evolving.
It gets better every 2 days.
With every iteration, there's new possibilities are being created on a day-to-day basis. You know, based on what you just said, Ben, I know the jobs are not going to be the same. We're going to be changing a few things. In your opinion, which jobs, if you can give me an estimate, probably, you know, it's hard to pinpoint, but just an estimation, which jobs do you think will change the most?
Probably high knowledge jobs would change the most, but they're going to change in the way that they're going to become AI enabled. It's not going to be the change everybody thinks. So if you're in finance, if you're a data scientist like I am, those jobs are examples of knowledge jobs. I think AI is going to make those areas more advanced, not less advanced. The coding complexities behind that are going to be at a greater scale. For data science, quantum AI, explainable AI, setting up these advanced AI systems, that's going to take human capability to set them up and use them and understand the results. There's going to be discoveries that we don't even know are discoverable from this type of technology. New pharmaceuticals are going to be made from it. That's another example. Pharmaceuticals, right? Like an AI can make a drug pretty easily. Not yet, but in the future. But once you add in some of these other complexities, right? That's a new job. I don't know what the job's called, but it's there.
Yeah, there's got to be something out there in that way, in that space. You personally, Ben, how do you use AI on a day-to-day basis? How do you experiment with it?
So I like to use AI as a devil's advocate, so to speak. So I let AI know what I'm doing for the day, and then give me some counter arguments to try to make me think of something that maybe I wouldn't think of. So it tests its adaptability, essentially. Like, hey, you're doing it this way. Have you considered doing the conversation this way? Or maybe instead of doing a meeting at 8 a.m., you'll get more productivity by doing the same meeting at 11 a.m. because you have 2 hours before it. You know, simple stuff that when you look at everything, makes sense, but you never think of it yourself. So that's what I'm using AI for. Second thing I'm using AI for, learning can be fun. So I use it to plan workouts. It sounds silly, but I have all this equipment. It's a lot of cognitive load to plan your own workout. I want to do more than just walk and run. So it pretty much tells me what to do. And it's a great coach.
Great. I've learned a few things. I can plan my own workout. That's good. I was relying on some secondary app to do this for me. Now I can use AI to do that. That's absolutely fun.
Just the pictures. You don't even need a prompt.
There you go. There you go. Between all the models that are out there right now, which one is your favorite?
My favorite model. It changes. So like Google has Gemini and VO3 for images. It's kind of unreal. But the model, it's like VO3, the model's fantastic. But Google Gemini, besides scheduling and stuff, I don't know if it's as intelligent as perhaps Claude, because I code a lot. So for that task, Claude Code for me has a much higher success rate than some of the other coding tools. But a lot of my, just because it was first to market, a lot of my files and notebooks and everything are in OpenAI's ChatGPT. So I guess it depends what I'm doing. I play around with it, but those are the big three for me. I'm also starting to use Lovable a lot more, which is a...
Sorry, which one?
Lovable. It's a vibe coding. Yeah, it's vibe coding. It's phenomenal. It's really cool. So if you need to make an application, I'm
going to take a note of that. Lovable. Okay, so I got to take a note of it.
Sometimes I make applications. What used to take me 40 hours, I can do in 4.
Does it do mobile? Mobile app? Does it develop mobile app?
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm making a regular one before I get into mobile, but it seems to be doing pretty good so far.
I started doing a mobile app development on ChatGPT, and I cracked my brain. It kept on hallucinating, kept on going back and corrupting good code. I said, okay, I'm done. So I got to try Lovable now. I got to take a note of it. Now, what do you think people would be surprised if we fast forward for 5 years? What would you think people would be surprised most in terms of AI down the road?
5 years. Let's simplify it. 2030, because 2031 is like a weird...
Yeah, we're getting there.
2030, so this AI between times, yes, it's happening very fast. We're all living through it together. I'm not trying to say that it's happening slowly, but I think we're not going to be as advanced in AI as a lot of the media says to be in 5 years. And that might be, and it might sound like I'm kind of being anti-AI right now because I just talked about all the great things about it, but I don't think the transformation piece is there. And a lot of societies attached to these rules. So for example, in medicine, a doctor, at least in the United States, has to be credentialed. They have to go to school for a certain amount of time. They have to meet all these other credentialing criteria. AI is not going to be able to, like, even if AI could replace a medical doctor, that bureaucracy is not going to change in the 5 years. And the same with a lot of the other societies' rules. And some of that bureaucracy is good. I personally would want a physician that did the proper amount of time, or a nurse, or any of the other, a teacher, right? So I think people are underestimating how society's set up. It was designed for humans, not for AI. Let me put it that way.
You mean, for the audience, what Ben, I think, trying to address here is the policy shift with the AI deployment. And so governments, and I live here in Canada, governments and on every level, federal, provincial, municipal governments got tons of regulations around what to use and how to use it. And they're not as free as the enterprise sector or as the private sector in terms of deploying technology as, you know, a bank would, or I would say a small consulting firm would do. Government has to, you know, write legislations on every piece of technology that would go into the process of running government. And also regulating these professions out there, right? So lawyers, doctors, et cetera, everybody needs to be, still go to school, still go to university, still graduate, and then deploy the right technology to run your business the way you see fit, I guess, with no harm done to the customers, patients, et cetera.
A great example of this is just a few years ago, there was a study in machine learning, not even a formally AI at that point, was deemed to be a replacement for radiology. And more machine learning applications were implemented for radiologists. What do you think happened to radiology? Now there's more demand for radiology and more radiologists that are in existence than before when this machine learning application And now it's even probably more advanced than it was back then. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. So it's not all doom. There's a lot of positive aspects of it. It's just we're living through it. And I think there's a lot of other change going on in the world too. And it's
Yeah.
just all confounding at one time.
There must be a huge application for AI in telemedicine anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially probably for mental health, psychiatry, therapy, not as a replacement, but to help take notes, caretake, like patient summaries.
Yeah, one of my responsibilities back in the days, I was working with the medical sector on telemedicine, and you reminded me of the radiology because we had put a fiber optics and a bunch of other telecom foundational equipments. I was on the telecom sector, and there was a Halifax-based hospital and radiology division in it, and they're providing obviously radiology services to the community to where they are. Because we enabled technology back then, now they were able to do radiology reports and assessments for patients that they were down in the Caribbean. Like they were assessing patients that they're not even in the country, and we're able to do that via like technology allowed them to do that. It's not like because you deploy technology, then all of a sudden this phase has been going through the human mind for a long, long time ago. Anytime there was a bit of an advancement, there was somebody was telling me the other day on the podcast, says, when the car was invented, people were voting for the horse. So people wanted to ride a horse. They didn't want nothing to do with the car. And now I guess we're in the same way. I think we're just being a human, that's all. I've got a few quick questions for you, I guess, to close the conversation, if you don't mind. We call it the lightning round. So one AI skill everyone should build or learn.
That's a great question. That is not a quick question, Robin. If I had to simplify one, how to validate AI output, making sure that it's correct.
And one AI myth that needs to die, get rid of it.
95% AI unemployment, 95% employment.
And by the way, there is a report I was reading yesterday. Somebody actually took the time to tell the world there would be a 95% unemployment by 2030. If I find the report, I'll send it to you.
I didn't know that.
I can't believe somebody actually took the time to do that. One industry about to be disrupted, like really disrupted with AI.
Probably acting, social media, the arts potentially. There's a lot of debate going on, especially with the recent Supreme Court case in the United States that you can't copyright AI related content, but that might it sounds silly, but it might actually increase the AI usage in those areas because people are going to want to challenge the system.
And the last one habit people should build with AI.
Learning agility, continual use, the change management, use it for fun. Just try it. Make a grocery list out of it. It doesn't have to be for work. You don't even have to make an account to make the grocery list. You can use it for free.
Absolutely. I want to thank you, Ben. What do you think of the conversation so far?
This has been fun, Robin. I didn't even realize we're at time.
I know, I love these conversations. That's why I love doing what I do, I guess. I enjoy talking to people. Hopefully, I'll see you tomorrow at the networking event. If you don't have time, I completely understand. If you have time, you are welcome to attend. I want to thank you so much, Ben, for joining me. Thanks for spending the time with me today.
No problem, Robin. Thank you for having me on your show. Happy 3rd year anniversary. I didn't realize that. I mean, that's a huge thing. There's so many podcasts, right? Like that's huge.
Absolutely. I really enjoy what I do. I do this, five, six, seven of them a week. I lose count sometime. I enjoy talking to people like yourself, Ben, and all the thought leaders that came through here to this channel, some of them multiple times, which I love seeing people again. And the offer extended to you as well, Ben. If you ever want to come back for another reason, for another topic, you're welcome. The door is always open.
Thank
Well,
you,
thank you so
Robin.
much for joining me. We appreciate it. For the audience, I want to thank you so much for listening in. If you're coming on YouTube, thanks for watching us. If you're coming on the audio podcast, thanks for listening in. And just a reminder, if you would like to get like a small, short description of what we talked about here with Ben and for many other guests that came along, you can just subscribe to our blog post where I summarize the conversation into a small one-page read. Takes you 2, 3 minutes to read the highlights of our conversation here, so you don't have to spend an hour listening to it. Feel free to listen to the 1 hour. I'm not stopping you. But if you want a Coles Note version of this, head out to our blog post site, robinayoub.blog, and find out. Thanks so much, everybody, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thank you.